Hello and welcome to the very first episode of the Glina Til Glina podcast, Sustaining the Movement, Resourcing the Movement, Invest in Feminists, that brings you stories about feminist organizing in the MENA region. What does feminist funding really look like? From direct funding to healing practices, the series will explore what makes funding such a complex issue for the MENA region. I'm happy to be welcoming our panelists today. Rachel Dorr Weeks is the head of UN Women in Lebanon. She joined the Lebanon office in March 2019. From 2018-2019, she served as a UN Women's Deputy Regional Director for Arab States. Rachel has worked for UN Women for 11 years and on issues of peace and security for 16 years, including in Afghanistan, Rwanda, Yemen, Jordan, and now Lebanon. Ponso has over 25 years of experience working in social justice, particularly women and girls' rights in Africa. She is a keen supporter of the leading contribution that African women and their organizations across the world make to the feminist transformation of women's rights in Africa and worldwide. Ponso is a board member of Empower, the Emerging Markets Foundation, and Make Every Woman Count, and was elected twice as one of the BBC 100 women.
And I have finally Benchi Yimer, who is a former domestic worker who lived in Lebanon for nearly a decade. Alongside fellow Ethiopian migrant workers, she founded Enya Lenya, which means Us for Ourselves, a community-based organization working on migrant domestic workers' issues and women's issues in Lebanon and in Ethiopia. It is my pleasure to welcome you to this conversation. My name is Paola Selwan-Daher. I'm the Senior Global Advocacy Advisor at the Geneva Office of the Center for Reproductive Rights, and I'm a board member of Urgent Action Fund for Women's Human Rights, which is a feminist fund that supports women human rights defenders in North America, the Middle East, and Eastern Europe. Again, welcome. Thank you so much for participating in our podcast. And I guess my first question would really be directed towards Benchi. And I think it would be a great way to start our conversation by listening more to Enya Lenya's experience with funding, with setting up an organization, and with the challenges and opportunities that you have faced. Benchi, please, the mic is yours.
First, thank you so much for giving me this opportunity and also for hosting this. Thank you. Enya Lenya founded since 2017, and regarding a fund that was very, we face a lot of challenge as any other community groups. Since 2017 till April 2020, we never secure any grant, and only we had one fund for education program. So other than that, we never have any fund we've been secured for several reasons. And first, because we didn't register in Lebanon, and we're not allowed to have bank accounts as migrants, and we're not allowed to register in Lebanon, or we're not allowed to organize in Lebanon as a community. And also not knowing who to ask, where to ask, or to collaborate. So it's like we collaborate, we work with many organizations, local and international. But so far, when it comes to grants or to do project or application, we never have any empowerment, or nobody was directing us where to get the funds and who to apply and where comes the fund for supporting domestic workers. So not just in Yalenya, we have many community groups in Lebanon, from Philippines, Cameroon, Sri Lanka, and Nigerian. All of us, we face the same problem. And so we used to cover all of our expense from our own personal salary. And like most domestic workers, we get paid between $150 to $400. From that money, we have to pay for tickets, we have to organize events, we have to pay medical support, we have to support our community. And as in Alenia, we used to sell spices, coffee, and those stuffs as any other community, and also cooking and fundraising on ground. That's how we used to support ourselves in the past 4 years. And there is, I'm speaking Nyalenya experience, but we have community group who's been exist 9 years, 10 years. They face the same challenge, and we get the fund after 2020, and pretty much our, even now, our income comes from fundraising on and online. And we have also several grants, but still we're not getting the international grants and the big grants. And but as in Alenia, and we help all nationality domestic workers and the repatriation, emergency relief, the COVID reliefs. We were there for the community, taking bigger responsibility since 2020 April until now. Every single day we do those responsibility. Not just in Nyalenya, all community groups, and they're with the limited access of funds we do. So still we're struggling. We manage, as in Nyalenya, we manage to get the small fund, but still when it comes to the big fund, most of the international organization, they say, you're not a local organization, you're not a register, and we can give you. So we do like 95% of the job in Lebanon, and we register in Canada, but still we not consider as local NGO, because it's not like we don't want to register, but we can't. This is the law. Many of them, they cannot. So, but we doing the service, we're local, but because of the kafala system, no way we can register. And still we're struggling, not just us, all community groups. This is our experience as migrants, not just us, Palestinian, Syrian, and any migrant domestic worker who run groups or organization. This is our experience.
Thank you so much, Banshi, for sharing your experience. And what really is striking to me is how the issue of structural discrimination against migrant domestic workers, but also against, as you were mentioning, like foreigners who might be refugees or might be migrant domestic workers, play out in Lebanon and kind of compound the already pre-existing structural discrimination that you face as women. And so I guess that going from there, my question maybe to Rachel and to Ponso would be responding to what you have just shared with us. Rachel and Ponso, what in your experience, what is it that international funds or UN organizations can do to help mitigate the effect of this structural discrimination that some organization, women's rights feminists, women human rights defenders face in their day-to-day work?
As you know, the restrictions are very tough in Lebanon and, you know, in many places for registering organizations. And the UN's restrictions that are tend to be placed upon us by different organs and bodies of the UN because of concerns around fiduciary responsibility tend to be very stringent. So if I can just give you two examples, for us to pass funding to any organization, the organization has to have been around for 5 years. And as you say, has to be registered. And that already precludes a ton of organizations that are doing incredible work. So as UN Women, when we talk about supporting emergent women's rights actors, when we talk about supporting movement building across the women's rights spectrum, the reality is that our funding modalities make it very difficult for us to do. One of the ways that we've been trying to do that is we've created this small grants mechanism, which lowers these requirements. We can give a small amount of money, which I think is still substantial for organizations that have just emerged. And we've lowered a lot of the requirements for that, but the requirements still remain that you have to have been, that you need to be a registered organization, and that you need to have been registered for 3 years. So there are very serious challenges for us to be able to give organizations like yours money, and we know the good work that you're doing and that you need it. And just a final reflection, I think what ends up often happening is because we want to give organizations like yours money, we end up passing the funding to a larger organization and we ask them to give it to you. So somehow, hopefully, organizations like yours get it in the end. But it means a few things. It means, one, that the overheads are higher for the original source of the money, for the taxpayers, whatever country or source it's coming from. But it also means that we defer the risk to smaller organizations, which is also not a good practice. We should be taking the risk and responsibility on ourselves instead of finding another smaller organization and basically saying, hey, you deal with the risk of providing funding to this organization. So it's something that we're very cognizant of as a women's rights organization, and we've been working to try to fix with developing these new modalities, but we certainly are not there yet.
I'll follow on from Rachel, I think, absolutely, to recognise the incredible work of Egnalena, and just to say that to hear firsthand from you, Bunchy, was really inspiring. I am relatively new to the African Women's Development Fund, having been here only for 6 months. And I come to the organisation at a time where we have an opportunity, as we go through a new strategic planning process, to really think about how we can support organisations who are at the front line of addressing some of these issues for women and girls across Africa and the Middle East. Interestingly, I think what Rachel said about AWDF having more flexibility, because of the nature of where we as an organisation receive a significant amount of our funding, we also have some restrictions and minimum criteria that we have to, in some regards, place on the funds, on the kinds of work and organisations that we can support. However, I mentioned this point in our organisational strategic planning process because what we're really keen to do is to understand what the very specific needs of organisations who are younger, who are nascent, and who are not able, because of the context in which they work, to traditionally register and to demonstrate a sort of minimum period of existence. So, I think when we talk about learning and what learning have we done, for AWDF, there's a couple of things. One is about ensuring we really understand the organisations who are not the traditional medium to larger sized organisations. I think the second one is just to acknowledge that as a funder, we have only been supporting work in the Middle East since 2016. So that may seem like, you know, 5 years, but we also recognise that the context, the issues, the way that organisations are responding in those contexts is new to us. So we also, as an organisation ourselves, need to be much more purposeful and rigorous about understanding those. And we're doing that in a variety of ways, which we will be strengthening as we go through our strategic planning process.
Thank you very much to Rachel and Bonso for sharing your perspective and the constraints within which you operate. Going back to you, Banshi, and your experience with Egnalena, first of all, I really want to reiterate the praise that your organization has gotten from our co-panelists and really echo and emphasize it. It really has been quite powerful to witness what you were able to achieve and how, you know, women and workers' solidarity came together to fill in a gap that the states really should have been filling and where the state really should have stepped in. And just listening to the conversation, I really see kind of a tension between, on the one hand, you know, donor dynamics and how they impact the fabric of civil society in any given context, and sometimes aid conditionality and sometimes donor requirements, versus kind of supporting women human rights defenders. And what you were mentioning, Banshi, with regards to cross-movement solidarity, when you really say it very clearly that it's not just for Ethiopian migrant domestic workers, but for all the domestic migrant domestic workers, and also for Palestinian refugees and Syrian refugees. And so how to resolve this tension, and what brings me maybe to a more specific question for you, Banshi, is, you know, what are your current needs? What are the current gaps in seeking and accessing the funds, apart from, you know, the issue with the registration, but what you have been, what you have seen in terms of, you know, just not just for you, but also for smaller emerging groups, as well. I'm thinking as well about the role of intermediary structures, the issue of the system of fiscal sponsors. What do you see as their added value and limitations? If you could speak a bit more about that.
Communication is so important. How many domestic worker organization knows the fund that's out there? So as the international funders' message is reaching and out to the community, and that's the first in question. And is it really, did anyone, all of us, do we have the knowledge of how much fund it is given and for to empower or to assist the domestic worker in Lebanon? And second is how long it has been and what kind of change it has been done so far. So those are so important, and how many of us we know, because if I tell you my own experience, I did not know this all funds that's available out there until I came to Canada and register in Nyalenya and have proper communication with the outside world. So inside Lebanon, when we don't even have this information, how much fund it's available out there to begin with. So other than that, the way it is happening now, it should be changed. This is like kind of advice or like what's we needed. It has to be changed because we really do appreciate your offer to help and to assist and all of us and all organizations who work so hard in Lebanon as well. But I'll put it this way. And you are providing funds for women who, like Black women who, or like for people who fight for Black Lives Matter or any other, it could be indigenous. So, but if it's not, like, let's say it could be hundreds of organizations out there who fight for us, but like if we're not included in that and system and not in the opportunity, and for me, it will be really hard to achieve what you're looking for and what we're looking for. So I believe we've been excluded from like a big funds, and I cannot say excluded. And since 2020, we've been getting a small fund, but still we cannot reach out the big fund. But the rest of the community group, they've been excluded from any fund. So it will not make any, I'm not saying it will make 100% a different or and will change the kafala system without including the community, without including the activists, without including the people who fight for this cause and taking the risk. So we should be included on every part of this opportunity and this plan. So it will be, let's say the kafala system is excluding us not to organize, not to register, not to have bank accounts, and not to fight for an our own cause. So, and then when it comes to the funders also, if they are not, like for any circumstances, like you say, the risk of not being responsible or the way of you design your funds, if we are excluded even from the funders, how we will be organizing ourselves, how can we fight, how can we survive as activists, will be more weakened from the system and also a lack of a fund. Lucky me because I'm here and I manage and then we manage and to do what we are doing. But like how many of them they struggle? Over 10 to 15 years, and some activists still they are struggling even to cover the daily expense and transportation, a small thing even. So this is things that has to be a big change. And to see, to talk to the community, what's our need, how it has to be, you know, designed, and the fund comes to, you know, empowering and helping domestic workers. And is it really reaching us out? And, you know, again, I do appreciate the other NGO also what they're doing, but like including us, it's a really big part of to make the change in long term. And when it comes to, intermediary like and physical sponsor. So I work with the intermediary in 2018 one project. Before that, I did not know how to create it. projects or how to apply for funds, budgeting, timing, those things, I have no clue. But I learned on that process because of the training they gave us for 8 months to design, to create, to apply everything I learned from that training. And they did big contributing for where we at today because of we did one project. Since that project, we learned how to do and everything. So it's really important also for the other community groups. Still, there is many of them and trying to reach out, and they did not know how to create projects or to reach out the fund or timelining, budgeting. And this is really important and when it comes to intermediator. But when it comes to physical sponsor, there's a good side and there's also a challenge. The good side is like if someone like us in Alenia, let's say we didn't register in Lebanon, if it needed like local NGO, we can just channel the money and do what we want to do. But the other side is when we use local NGO, it depends on what they do. If we are like applying the same grants they are applying, are we going to get that fund for us? Are they willing to do it? And other things, they have their own projects, they have their own jobs. So it will be really challenging to give full attention to the group and to assist, to mentor. So that's the challenge we faced in the past and also a couple of community leaders as well. So it should be a choice. I suggest it should be a choice whether we choose which one is comfortable. I can say for my own personal experience, we should be like, it depends on the organization. It depends on the groups. So they should be given a choice whether to work with physical sponsor or a mediator. Yeah, this is what I can say. Like, we should be choosing which one it's good for us. Sometimes it works with the physical sponsor, but we have many challenges because any organization we know of, they will be having their own responsibility and added to our responsibility. It's pretty much collecting receipts, making sure we use the money properly. But they are not going to be involving on empowering us and assist us like physical sponsor. But the physical sponsor is like different, for us, it depends on what we do, what we're applying for, and it should be given a choice to choose which one is better.
Thank you so much, Banshee. This really sheds a light on all the constraints and the challenges that you have to deal with, and really what needs to change. And that is really making me think about the need to really go deeper into what feminist funding means. How can feminist funds help, the role of consortiums like the Count Me In Consortium, like really this whole conversation that is happening at the global level at the moment around, what do we mean by feminist funding? And I think one key element that you have highlighted is the issue of inclusion and meaningful participation. And that is kind of core to a human rights-based approach to anything, really. And that should be part, like a core part of a human rights-based approach to funding as well. And I would like to turn back to Rachel and Ponso. If you can share with us, if you had any kind of good practice or lessons learned again, or mechanism that you have within your organizations to make sure that the beneficiaries of the grants that you administer are included in all decisions that pertain to them and that will directly affect them.
Banshee, that was hugely interesting, and it's really got me thinking, because I think AWDF is based in Ghana, and so we are some distance, contextually, culturally, geographically, from where the work in the Lebanon is happening. But I think there were a couple of things that you said, which are things which are a kind of key part of our approach to supporting, particularly smaller community organisations. And the work that we support in the Middle East is funded through the Netherlands Ministry of Foreign Affairs, through the Leading from the South initiative. And the Leading from the South initiative is a consortium of four southern-based feminist women's funds. So that speaks to what Paola was saying about how can we ensure that the work is based in a better understanding of what the contexts are. So I'm not saying that being based in Accra and being traditionally a supporter of work across Africa, that we are hugely familiar, but we are getting more so. I think I mentioned the Leading from the South initiative because one of the key features of that is about supporting collaboration and consortia. So yes, AWDF will fund through fiscal sponsors, but we do understand that there are pros and cons to that mechanism. But we are also really keen to support consortia or clear collaborations between groups. And for us, that is where we would hope to be able to see this clear involvement and leadership and ownership of the work by those groups that are, that are impacted by the issues. So I'm saying that because even though it doesn't necessarily fully respond to your question, if one member of the consortium is able to take on what is fundamentally the administrative responsibility of ensuring the management of the funds, then looking for partners who are really based in and representative of the communities as part of that consortia is something that is a key priority for us. So I would definitely speak to that. I think, the spirit of self-determination and really knowing what is needed and what the priorities are in communications is a key part of our what we're looking for in applications. So would very much say that that is something that we look to see.
Again, Ponzo, I think you raised some really important points about issues of self-determination and defining how relationships work. And Bunky, again, all of the challenges that you set out. And it got me thinking about a few things, if I can. One is the effect of aid on activism. And I think this is something that we all struggle with because so much of aid is delivered tied to specific deliverables, for lack of a better term. So we know that there is this intrinsic link between a mobilized women's rights movement in a country, a mobilized social justice movement, but in particular, a mobilized women's rights movement and democratic dividends. That is a relationship that's been proven, and also the relationship between an active women's rights movement and stability. So not only for women's rights, for meeting people's needs, but for the stability of a country, for a democracy to flourish, we need activists like you doing the activist work that you do, in addition to the work that you do in handing out aid and keeping people from going under, etc. And so the question, I guess, is that we're grappling with around feminist financing is how do we support that? How do we then not come to you and say, okay, if Enyalenga wants our funding, you're going to need to deliver 17 blankets, 37 shelters, 47, and then divert all of the time and energy that was being put into activist mobilization into what is essentially humanitarian service delivery. And so again, I don't think we have the answer for that, but this small grants fund that UN Women has established is one step in trying to do that. So we say we can give up to $30,000, basically no strings attached. You don't have to deliver anything. All you have to do is continue to exist, and you can spend the money on just, and I think Kabina to Kabina has a similar grant making mechanism, and perhaps the African Women's Development Fund does too. But it's for small organizations like yours that might be activist oriented. So all you have to deliver is basically staying afloat for the duration of the grant. And now that mechanism isn't perfect, but it is a step to try to acknowledge that there's a difference between funding a women's rights organization or a women-led organization that is humanitarian in nature and a women-led organization that is activist in nature and is a fundamental part of the activist movement or sort of social movements in a country that we're in.
Thank you, Ponzo and Rachel, for your insight. And I could not agree more with regards to the impact that donor dynamics have on social fabric and on civil society organizations, and on how sometimes they can actually hinder cross-movement and cross-organization solidarity. And I think there's a lot of thinking that needs to be done around what, you know, feminist funding means, what it means. You know, we hear, you know, especially since 2020 was a bit derailed, but with the Generation Equality Forum, with the conversations around, you know, the role that women's rights organizations and workers' rights organizations play within social justice movements. We've heard a lot the phrase kind of invest in women and girls, invest in women and girls. But at the same time, sometimes it feels that women's rights and feminist organizations cannot really kind of fulfill their own agenda or implement their own agenda because of donor requirements and donor dynamics and, again, aid conditionality. And so I think that that coupled with the structural discrimination that we have mentioned, and with additional restrictions that some countries can have, like Lebanon, that has inherently discriminatory regulations with regards to registering migrant workers organizations, really makes it very difficult for organizations like Enya Renya and other emerging groups to be able to work the way they would like to work and to receive the solidarity that they deserve.